This is ABC AFL Daily.
Corbin and Ben with you on ABC AFL Daily on the precipice of a new AFL season. A look at all 18 teams over the next 4 days. Oh, we got a lot to chop up. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ben Cameron's across the other side of the desk from me. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Corb. Great to be here. I am looking forward to this. So all 18 teams, we'll break them up into to four groups. So your team is covered somewhere in amongst all of this. We'll look at the strength of schedule that they've got, who they got in the off-season, who they've lost in the off-season as well. And then we'll go through the storylines surrounding the team, pick out our fun storylines, our serious storylines, and we'll look at the over-under. How many games are they going to win this season, do we think, I think is what we'll do over the course of the next few podcasts.
Sounds dangerous. Sounds like the sort of thing that will be plucked out in August when we're wildly wrong on one of our predictions. But we'll do our best to find our way through and see if we can forecast as best we can as to what's ahead of us in 2026. A bit's changed. Obviously, top 10. We'll get into some of that in just a moment. But before we do, Ben, a look back on 2025. I sat through an AFL briefing recently where they went through a number of key sort of numbers or metrics data from the 2025 season. So average attendance, 37,000. So it's pretty good. You roll up to the footy and there's 37,000 there on average for every game you go to in 2025. 40% more hours watched on AFL footy than the next most Australian sport. So you're probably thinking, well, how does that work? Basically, if you put together all the hours that people spend and the amount of people watching Australian rules football, there is 40% more of that than there is the next most sport in the country.
So I heard Roy Masters on Offsiders on Sunday arguing with Caroline Wilson that the NRL has higher ratings than the AFL. Is this creative accounting? Like, how does that make sense?
So I was listening to you, Ben, and Limo quoted the figures on Grandstand on the weekend saying four of the most five watched sporting events last year were NRL matches with the three Origin games and obviously the comp grand final. And yet, I think the way that this pans out is because the AFL has sort of nine games a weekend, sort of more than the NRL, for example, the games go longer. So again, if you look at the actual like aggregate time that people are watching, that equates to 40% more than any other sport.
It feels a little bit to me like if you torture the data enough, you can make it say whatever you want.
Okay. 6.1 million people watched the grand final. It was the biggest TV audience in 9 years. 1.4 million memberships. You're talking about torturing data. Mm. Well, 17 of the last 18 years, the membership record's been broken.
Mm. Only 400,000 of those are pets, so that's a great sign.
Here's some other ones. The lower seed won 6 of the 9 finals last year, which is interesting.
That is interesting.
Absolutely, with wild cards around the corner, and 50% of the finalists were new, so 4 of the 8 weren't there the year previous. Saturday audiences were up 13%. We had so many calls about paywall and everything else. Obviously, we had the blackout last year on from free to air on Super Saturday, which was obviously all on pay TV. By the way, a deal which has existed for many years in the NRL and sports still thriving and seemingly going well despite the fact that that's in place. 25% of all games were decided by 10 points or less. So one in every four means you tune in every weekend. You'll see two games, more than two games decided by 10 points or less. And interestingly, if you're wondering why the AFL, and particularly in the southern states, if you're from Aussie rules heartland, you're probably wondering why the AFL is doing things like going to India, for example, or persisting with the academies in the northern states. Well, 54% of the Australian population lives in either New South Wales or Queensland. Only 12% of the playing cohort comes from that part of the country. So that is why the push is on there. More than half the population live in these two states, and yet the AFL has barely scratched the surface in those markets. And 4% of the Australian population has an Indian heritage or from Indian descent. So that is also why the AFL are trying to make inroads over in India. Not just getting competitions up and going there, but I think trying to learn a bit more about the culture, what they can take here, how they can try to bring over fans, particularly of South Asian heritage, to our great game of Australian rules football. So that's essentially part of the reasoning behind that.
A few things around that. I mean, there were stories late last year around whether DAZN, who own KO now, whether they felt like they'd paid too much and the scope for growth of the AFL internationally. So I wonder whether that's a part of the move to India and the Indian interest from the AFL and also trying to convert some of those diaspora here in Australia, if you will, Corb. So I think that's a part of it. And just on the numbers being up on Saturday, I posed this question on Monday night, which people might have listened to as part of the ABC AFL Daily podcast feed. If you're a young kid and there's a game on Thursday night, Friday night, no game on Saturday, and you're in bed when those matches are on, the only game you can watch free-to-air TV is a Sunday afternoon game. So I'm not posing or proposing that I have the answer to this question. It's maybe one I can put to the AFL. They just have to work out whether that is enough for the long-term health of the game. So I understand they have to take the money from pay TV, which is what they get out of KO. They need something for their investment, which is the lockout of free-to-air on Saturdays. But the AFL have to decide whether the financial benefit of that, which does subsidise things like the AusKick program, which is dirt cheap in reality compared to other junior sports, whether that is enough for only one game to be on free-to-air, which maybe it is.
During the day.
I'm not saying I have the answer.
Yeah. Not to mention TV audiences are through the roof for the night games for a reason.
Because everyone's home.
People are watching at night time. You can record it, watch it the next day, whatever it turns out to be, all the things that we had to do with more kids, for example. So I feel like it's the perfect, I mean, mate, it's, you don't have to be twirling your mustache to, you know, think you're incentivized by certain things. Clearly, I also do some work for Fox Sports too, and Fox Footy. So, maybe take this with a grain of salt. But I feel like it's the perfect balance between, you know, free-to-air games, and then if you want the total package and you want everything all thrown in every game at your disposal, you can watch on your phone at any time or whatever it turns out to be, you've got that too. There's, audio, radio commentaries of every single game on across, four different networks, for example. So I think it's an amazing deal with, a broadcast deal, which, is across so many different media landscapes and as good as there is just about anywhere in the world. So, Maybe I'm always going to say that.
I'm not answering the question. I'm posing it. Like Raf Epstein, who we work with in Melbourne, they say, Raf, how do you survive so long in the radio game? He said, I ask questions, I don't answer them. So I'm just posing the question there. The AFL will have to answer it.
What's ahead in 2026?
Yeah, just interesting. The ladder will actually look different this year. So we're so used to having a line under the top eight. Now we're going to have two lines. We'll have a sort of softer line under the top six, and then we'll have a secondary line under 10th position. So that's obviously with the advent of the wildcard weekend, 7th playing 10th, 8th versus 9th. And then I think just some things for us to keep in mind as we roll through our preview. So we know that on average there are three changes per year to the top eight.
Yep.
So it's likely that three of the bottom 10 will jump up. But obviously that changes this year with the fact that we now have a bottom 10. But things to keep in mind, usually there's a bit of a jump. And history tells us that there's one leaper from the bottom 10 to the top four. So I think that's of more interest as we work through who that is. 13 and 14 were the only years we haven't seen that.
All right, let's get into our previews, Ben. So we're going to work our way backwards here and cover the 18 teams in the competition, which means we start way down the bottom with the lowly West Coast Eagles, a one-win team from 2025.
Yeah, so zero primetime games for the West Coast Eagles.
How many?
This year, zero.
Not one.
Not one, and by primetime I mean sort of Thursday, Friday night. They do have their WA Day game, Corb, which you were an advocate of for a long time, weren't you? That
big time.
This is a football day in Western Australia. They should own that day. It feels like they're going to. They've got the 13th hardest draw, so that's their strength of schedule, which is interesting given they were the worst team last year, but they can't play anyone worse than them, can they?
This is the part I don't understand about strength of schedule, right? So I would argue Brisbane have the easiest draw because they were better than every other team, and West Coast have the hardest draw because they found every team difficult because they only won one game. But I don't know. I'll let you run through the strength of schedule, but that's just my overall sort of philosophy when it comes to that, and it is one of those things that's impossible to judge until retrospect.
We know that they lost Oscar Allen, who was their co-captain last year, so a free agent. He joins Brisbane. Liam Ryan jets off to St Kilda. Big inclusions in the draft, really. So Willem Dersma, the number one pick, obviously. Cooper Duff Tyler as the fourth pick. Josh Lindsay as pick 19, and then they've got some SSP players. I won't run through this for every club, but for the Eagles, it's interesting, I think. So Finn McRae, Dev Robertson, Harry Schonberg, they got Brandon Stasovic in with the trade, and Tyler Young from Richmond.
So with all due respect, Tyler Young's a nice piece. The other guys you mentioned there are a little bit sort of discarded from other clubs.
Well, Stasevic isn't.
No, Stasevic isn't. Sorry, he's a very fine pickup and obviously a dual premiership winner.
But assuming he can stave off the concussion issues he's had as well, which is a serious issue.
But the first two or three guys you mentioned basically didn't work at their first home. And I think that's good. That'll help the middle class at West Coast that they'd really been lacking, hadn't they? Yeah. They got the guys at the top end that are on the way out. They got a whole lot of guys down the bottom and not a lot of top end talent. So maybe they'll be more useful there than they were at their original clubs.
I think the main reason, if I had to find a reason as to why I would put on the TV and watch the West Coast Eagles, it would only really be for Harley and the Worm.
Yeah.
So Willem Dersma, they call him the Worm.
Thank you for spelling that
well,
out.
Well, some people might not know.
I didn't.
I think that would be the only reason I'd put it on.
Yeah.
Can we also keep a watch this year of how many people reference unicorns? Like, it has become the most overused.
There's unicorns everywhere.
Yeah. A unicorn is a mythical creature that... There should only be one unicorn.
Oh,
and it feels like everyone wants to tell you, Luke Jackson, he's a unicorn. It's like, it feels like there are so many players that we want to use that for. Sam Darcy, he's a unicorn.
Yeah.
Willem Dersma will be called a unicorn at some stage this year.
Okay.
Mark my words.
Let's keep track of how many unicorns we find across the AFL media landscape this year.
Yep.
All right. We're gonna keep a unicorn list as we work our way through.
Played on the wing in the unsanctioned practice match, the match team against Fremantle. Willem Dersma kicked the first goal of the game. I feel like he is the modern day version of Matthew Pavlich, Adam Goods, where he can play across all three lines. Like he can do it all.
My favourite Willem Dersma stat or fun fact.
Yep.
Is that he's got three siblings in the competition essentially now. So all four of them are in the AFL system. Xavier, Zane, Yasmin and Willem, which spells out their initials, Ben.
X, Y, W, Z.
Yes.
Yeah,
W, X, Y, and Z.
Yes. I'm much better at A, B, C, D at the start of the alphabet. The back end of the alphabet's a bit of a trouble. But, they went to the back of the alphabet, the Dersmas, didn't they?
Yeah. I think if I'm correct, is it maybe... I think Xavier was first, wasn't he?
Yes, he's
Xavier,
the oldest.
X. I take it Yasmin was second, Y.
Yes.
And then it was Zane, Z. And then there's no letter after that, so they've gone back to W off the top when Willem came along as the youngest. So I'm a big fan of that. You mentioned Harley Reid. Looks terrific. In the best nick that we've seen him in the competition so far. He spoke about his summer. Last year he went home to Tongala, didn't come back in great shapes. Well reported. We know the season that he had, which was sort of up and down and not as impactful as year one. But looks lean. He said he's never felt as fit, and he certainly looks it. So fingers crossed he has a similar... type season as year one and continues on, gets that up and to the right, the trajectory that we know he and be the player we know he can be. Just on the Eagles, Andrew McQualter's first year, obviously. McQualter said at the end of the year, look, we've definitely gotten better, and yet statistically they got worse. So 69 points per game as opposed to the year before he got there, 63 last year. Points against, they've gone from 101 to 106. So that has drifted out. But the one thing that we have seen really steadily over the last 5 years, in 2021 they were the second oldest team in the competition. They were the youngest team in the competition last year. So naturally that had to trend in a certain direction. They got new co-captains too. Liam Duggan keeps the job, and Liam Baker comes in. His namesake to join him in that role, replacing Oscar Allen.
So before we move on, over under 3.5 wins for the season.
Oh.
Do they have more or less than that?
Under. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think to go from 1 to 4 is a huge leap. So
yeah,
I don't know. I think they're about a 3-win team.
I think I'm under as well. Okay. I think I'd lean to the under. I do feel like as we work through this, just a sidebar, I feel like you should have 9 overs and 9 unders. Otherwise, it's sort of a zero-sum game, isn't it? Like, you can't have everyone over. I mean, we've both gone under to begin, but I feel like that's important too.
And the good thing is we haven't actually done our over-unders in advance, so
no.
We'll work it out whether we get there, how many we've got over and how many we've got under by the end of it. All right, the Richmond Footy Club, they went 5-18 last year. They finished second last. They were up from a 2-win team the year previous. It was obviously second year under Adam Uze, and he has a contract until the end of 2028, so still plenty of time for Adam Uze with his young Tigers. I think it's fair to say we saw some green shoots, as Brendan Bolton would say, in 2025.
Yeah, so they've got 16 games in Melbourne this year, Richmond, and they've also got their games in Tasmania, which they've instituted for next season. I mean, the main two inclusions were at the draft, so they had pick 7 and pick 8. So Sam Cumming and Sam Grill come in.
I like both these guys a lot. Like, I'm not a big draft student and everything else, but I was watching all the previews before the draft came around, and Sam Cumings, the South Australian, I essentially looked at him, and I know Essendon had some early picks. I said, I like that guy. I would like them to get him.
What about him?
He's just a smooth mover, good decision maker, looks like ready-made, like plug-and-play kind of guy. And there's, from all reports, that both Cumming and Grill, the two Sams, are on track for round one debut. So don't be surprised if we see them Thursday fortnight at the MCG against the Blues.
The thing I like about Richmond this year is they get Melbourne, North and West Coast twice. So, I mean, they could foreseeably beat West Coast twice, and they're already on two wins. We don't know what we'll get out of Melbourne. Their over-under is 4.5. Do you have them over or under that mark?
Yeah, over.
Yeah, so do I. I have them over as well.
I think they'll get more than 5 wins. Sammy Lawler, can't wait to see him in the number 4 on his back. Feels like he's got the shoulders for it. He can rep that pretty comfortably. I mean, this was perfect, I think, the way Richmond did it. That essentially they held back so many of their low numbers from last year that their premiership champions had vacated in recent seasons. Just get a look at their young talent as to, you know, how they will go with it. I mean, imagine if, say, the season went completely differently for Sam Lawler last year. And, yeah, for whatever reason, he didn't get to play as much footy as he wanted to or struggled at the top level. Then at least you could understand at the end of year one whether he goes, you know what, the last thing I need is the pressure. Everyone's comparing me to Dustin Martin. All of a sudden, I've got to wear number 4 and everything else. And, you know, long history before that, Royce Hart and such in the history of the footy club. But, he showed enough last year, and just despite the injury that he had along the way. And, how exciting for Richmond fans. This is something that I think in the long run, Richmond fans will look back on and think, what a blessing that after a great dynasty, they had a number of high picks, and then unexpectedly, guys like Liam Baker and Dan Rioli and Shea Bolton that were contracted at the time came to them and essentially said, hey, we want out, when they were planning on keeping them. So they already had high picks in. They were able to move them on, get a haul back for them, and as a result, you know, really energised this rebuild to have, what, 7 picks last year inside the top 20, and they win again last year.
Yeah, I agree. I just hope for Adam Uze's sake that he's not doing a graveyard shift, which can happen. Like, it takes 6, 7, 8 pre-seasons for teams to be ready. So, yeah, I like the look of Sam Lawler, though. Did you see the mark he took on JP Ewan? Yep. Good grab. He looks exactly like Dusty, doesn't he, with the short hair and sort of a little bit thicker set, number 4 on his back. Exciting.
They did lose the game by 50 points, which seems to have got forgotten in all of that.
Yeah, I even saw in the footage you behind the goals waving the Essendon scarf out there at the hangar.
Mid-forward role for Tim Taranto this year as well, so promoted to vice-captain and maybe less midfield minutes, and we'll see him getting forward and trying to kick a few snags. Luke Bruce and Taylor Giray both joined the club in the off-season as well in development roles. And if you're driving down Punt Road, you'll notice they're doing that huge redevelopment there that's taking place at the moment as well. So that might be a little disruptive for coaches and the like and players in season 2026.
Yeah, and we haven't mentioned McKelty Lefau as well, who fell foul of the law with drink driving over the course of the weekend.
Was that about right, 2-game ban?
No, I don't think it was enough. I think it should have been more. I think even if you played him in I feel like a preseason game's half a game.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like he got 1.5 games. I feel like 2 was the lower end, 4 was probably the higher end, so I feel like he probably got 1.5.
Yeah, just a little precedent there. Lockie Hunter got 4, Jared Harbrow got 2. Clayton Oliver was in the off-season, no suspension, but was fined. And Luke Hodge, famously going way back a decade ago, I think got done during the final series, didn't he? No suspension, and ultimately went on to lift the cup in that hat-trick of flags for the Hawks. All right, we're done with Richmond. We're both going over on was it 5.5 you said the line?
4.5.
So we think they'll get to 5 wins. North Melbourne. The curious case of the Kangaroos. What are we going to get from Alistair Clarkson's men this year? They haven't won 6 games in a single season since 2019. They had 5.5 wins last year. It is year 4 of Alistair Clarkson. They've reached a point where they've got a similar profile as the Brisbane Lions in 2019, Fremantle in 2022, and Hawthorn in 2024, when those clubs made the jump. Is it the year for the Kangaroos?
Well, it seems to be that's their hope, isn't it? They feel like this is the year when we've reached the age profile that we can have the natural progression of the spike. I'm worried. I'm a little bit worried, and I'm a little bit nervous for Clarko's future. So he is contracted until the end of next year, but I'm a little bit tetchy about this. So they haven't really brought anyone in. Charlie Spargo as a free agent from Melbourne, but he was a little bit of a fringe player there. Finbar Mailey traded to Adelaide.
Horribly injury prone. Oh, it's interrupted a year with injury, wasn't he, too, Charlie Spargo?
Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, the only positive maybe, I mean, they've got Port, West Coast.
Feels like you're in pain trying to talk about this.
I am a little bit in pain because I want it to happen, but I just haven't seen anything to believe it. And the fact that George Wardlaw played a VFL game with restricted minutes and had another hamstring injury.
Don't like that.
Deeply, deeply concerning for me.
Stoppage game was strong last year. It's not really the trend in the competition. I mean, it's handy to have, but it's a game nowadays which is all about speed, isn't it? As we talk about speed kills in the modern game and ball movement. Here's some numbers for you, Ben. Kangaroos bottom two in points against in all 3 years under Alistair Clarkson. So they haven't really tightened up defensively there. Entering year four this year, as mentioned. Only the West Coast Eagles since Alistair Clarkson joined the club have conceded more points in the competition. And we know the pain that the Eagles are in at the moment. It's been 10 years since North Melbourne have played finals. And it's been 11 years since Alistair Clarkson lifted silverware, which, of course, happened back with the Hawks. You mentioned George Wardlaw. Did you mention Colby McKercher? He's had surgery on a broken finger. Mm. So that also is doesn't bode well.
They're big on Finn O'Sullivan. They love what he's doing down there, and obviously we know Harry Sheezel is going to be a very good player for them. What's enough for Clarko to survive? The over under is 7.5. Do they need to be over that? Do they need to be better than that?
I think they need to be just over that. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I think that's going to be about the mark. It was interesting to hear Alistair Clarkson say, "They've put the wild card in for us. Our ambition is to drive hard and play finals." And immediately I thought, gee, play finals, North Melbourne. But when you think it's an 18-team competition, 10 of them make the postseason, it's pretty pessimistic, isn't it, if you say, hey, we think we're going to be one of the 8 worst teams in the competition.
But 10th last year had 12 wins.
Yep.
So Sydney had 12 wins. Can North Melbourne get to 12 wins?
It's a bit of an outlier, though, isn't it? There's a chance that the team that finishes 10th this year has a losing record.
Yep.
There's every chance that the team that plays finals has doesn't make it to that mark.
But I'm taking the under on the 7.5. I don't think they get that many.
I think I'm probably with you. Yep, I think that's probably the case. I wouldn't be banking on it. So here we go. Go back 2023, Ben. Adelaide finished 10th with 11-12. Mm. So depending on how it shakes out, there is the possibility that that they don't get to that many.
But it feels like a big jump from 7.5, 7.8 to 11 even.
Yep. Oh, I'm going to go under.
They do have the
7.5.
They do have the third easiest draw for whatever that's worth.
Nick Larkey, by the way, the new captain, he replaces Jai Simpkin. That whole episode over the offseason where Collingwood offered a second round pick for him, that was rejected. He was unhappy that his centre bounce attendances had gone down, or his centre ball up attendances. Yep. And as a result, he wanted to play more midfield minutes. Apparently, he's been guaranteed he'll play on the wing this year. So there's a different role for Jai Simpkin. So not in the engine room, but running up and down on the outside. We'll see how he goes.
On to Essendon. This will be fun.
On to the Bombers. So this is the last in this block. We'll put a new drop out every day this week as we work our way through the 18 clubs in the competition. But the mighty Bombers. What to say about last year? I mean, it's hard to really assess it in the sense that they had the fifth most number of used players on record. They used 44 players last year. They had 15 debutants, and essentially they had 187 games missing through injury across the course of the season. So that was the most amount of games lost due to injury in the competition. They went 6-17. Is that right? 6-17. I've got 6-7 written down, but that doesn't work for the math. They finished 15th. The most interesting part, though, Ben, they finished the season on a 13-game losing skid. The last time the Bombers won a game of footy was May 23rd.
Do you feel like their fixture each year is front-ended, so we get to Anzac Day with a more thrilling, built-up match, and then it gets more difficult?
Well, what's the start to the season? Have you got that in front of you?
I can find it for you for Essendon.
I'll look it up. I've got it here. Here we go. So they start Hawthorn at the MCG, unlikely, at Port Adelaide away. You'd rather play Port Adelaide at home. North Melbourne at Docklands. They play the Western Bulldogs there, unlikely. And then they've got Melbourne during Gather Round and Gold Coast on the Gold Coast before they hit Anzac Day. I feel like in previous years it's been a softer run on the way in, but there's not too many bankable games there in the first 6 or 7 weeks for Essendon.
So they've got the 9th hardest draw. That's their strength of schedule. They play Brisbane, Hawthorn, GWS, Port Adelaide, Melbourne and North Melbourne twice. So a few difficult ones in there. Are you across the story in the NFL with the San Francisco 49ers?
That relating to?
They have a power station next to their training facility in Santa Clara.
Okay.
And they believe that that is causing a lot of the injury issues that they've had, like their running back, Run CMC, Christian McCaffrey. They feel like his Achilles issue and lots of the issues is caused by the radio frequencies from this power station.
Do you think it's something to do with the airport maybe? And the?
Well, I did note a story last year that didn't get an awful lot of traction. There was a tweet put out or a post on social media from one of the Essendon women's players about they trained inside the hangar and they all had sore quads.
Gotcha.
44 players last year, most of any team.
Yeah.
Lots of injury issues. They can't get the likes of Jordan Ridley right. They've had more issues than anyone else. Is there an issue with the hangar? Is the turf not right? They were doing all kinds of investigations.
I don't think they've left sort of any stone unturned, have they?
Like, we love that.
Well, they've done everything they can to try and work out exactly what the issue is. Matthew Innes is there now, isn't he? The head of fitness. I mean, he's probably top three highly regarded fitness bosses in the country. So we're about to find out. You know, you think if he's not able to get them up and going and they've had to turn all that group over, then maybe there is something more to it.
Is it a curse because they left Windy Hill? Was the soul of the place at Windy Hill?
Well, they lost to the Bowls Club. Essentially, the Bowls Club kicked them out because they couldn't get a bit of extra space.
And you tell me that they're a big club. I mean, the West Coast Eagles, they left Subiaco, their spiritual home.
Yeah. They won a premiership, didn't they? Or they weren't there yet?
I think they might have just been at Lathlane, so that might foil that theory. But thereafter?
I talk about this all the time, that the statute of limitations on Essendon has expired. There's an 18-team competition, there's an equalisation method, and the Adelaide Crows fall into this category, Carlton fall into this category. You should win one premiership every 18 years. If you win more than one premiership, you can call yourself a great club. You're a successful club. You've won more than what you should in that particular cycle. If you win less than that, it's hard to puff your chest out and say, you're a successful club in the competition. You look at the Bombers, they haven't won one since 2000. We sit here in 2026, their time's run out. Adelaide's last premiership was 1998. Carlton's last premiership was further back than that. It's in 95. So, I think that's inescapable inescapable is what I'm trying to spit out.
And given it's an 18-team competition, the statute of limitations on winning a final should be 9 years. And they haven't won a final since 2004, so we're well past that as well. We've got to get out of here.
You can imagine this, though. You can imagine Essendon get in the finals this year, and there's a 10-team competition or some stage in the near future, and they'll win one of those week one finals, and everyone will say, doesn't count, it's not a proper, it's not a top eight. Well, you can just imagine
that.
I'll
look forward to it. We've got to speak about Zach Merritt. We've got to get out of here as well. So that's a mess. Basically tried to blow the club up on his way out.
Yep. Seems like they've all moved on pretty quickly, though, haven't they?
It felt like his camp was certainly, this is just a feeling, I don't know this as a fact, felt like they were speaking to the media at different points, and then he stays, and now there's a contract extension.
Yeah, so there's a little bit to this. So he's changed management, basically, and the way that it happens is whoever your manager is that does the deal, they get the cut of the contract. Mm. So if you change management, your existing contract and the royalties that come from that go to the manager that did the deal. It doesn't go to the new manager. Mm. And so what has to happen is you need to rework the deal. You can change it by a day. You can change it by a dollar. You can do whatever you want to do, but you need a new piece of paper, which I think is trying to read between the lines as to what's going on here. So if you can rework the deal somehow, then the new manager will get the royalties as opposed to the old management. So I think there's a bit going on behind the scenes there that is still to play out. I actually think he's done all the right things. He's an absolute pro. We know that. New captain in Andy McGrath seems to have fitted in well. Sam Durham, who I think lived with Andy for a period of time, has just re-signed. He's now got the longest tenure of any player, I think, in the history of the football club, out to 2032 to stay at the football club. And you're about to ask me what's going to be a successful year for the Bombers, and I'll give you a number when it comes to the over and under and everything else. Do you know what will be a successful year for the Bombers?
What?
If they sign Zach Butters in the trade period. That is it for me. That I think if somehow they've got all this young talent that they can, Brad Scott can keep trying to nurture and everything else and all the rest of it, but at the end of the day, they can get themselves a club cornerstone type player at the end of the season. He wants to come home. The closest destination to where his hometown is in Dali is the hangar.
We actually did the maths on this, didn't we?
We punched it into Google Maps.
It's longer to get to Witten Oval
during peak hour
from Dali. Peak hour, non-peak hour, longer to get to Witten Oval from Dali.
It is.
Quicker to get to the hangar. He skirts the city, longer to get to Geelong.
Mitch Cleary was there when he was playing golf with the Essendon boys.
Didn't like that. Down at my club, it says, no visitors allowed, only golf members. So I didn't like that from Masai. But no point going to Hawthorn.
Yep.
So we're setting the over-under at 0.5 Zach Butters signatures for Essendon's successful season.
That it would honestly, you know how much I love him, Ben. He's like my favourite player. And if he came to play for the Bombers at the end of the year, I would just, that would be perfect. And do you know what? He's exactly what Essendon need. You need someone to come in and basically say, hey Zach, show us the way.
Yeah.
Let us all play in your image. The way that Zach goes about it, what a role model he would be. He's a good citizen. He goes about it the right way. Play for a big club in Melbourne. Come home.
Mm.
Come home, Zach.
Are the actual over-under 7.5?
Seven's about right. Under.
Yeah, I've gone under as well.
All right. That's our first set of clubs done. Because we had the little prelude off the top of the show, we basically only put four teams in the first category. But if you join us tomorrow, Ben, we have five clubs on deck. So Melbourne, Port Adelaide, St Kilda, Carlton, Sydney next up. And then we'll get to the top nine teams in the competition in the back end of the week. I will see you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.